Welcome to the Label Podcast, a show about disability, illness, and difference. I'm Lucy.
And I'm Alice.
And that's Lola. Lives differently, kaleidoscope identity, and this is who I'm meant to be. I'm just labeled me. I'm just labeled me.
Forget in this episode, I might swear, Lucy might cry, and you can check out details of the trigger warnings on our website.
Hello everyone, welcome to the next in our special disabled sport series of episodes this Paralympic season. I just wanted to let you know before you go forward that our guest did have a little bit of trouble with her audio during the recording, so it's not brilliant at some points. If you can stick through it, the content's still really interesting and I think you'll really enjoy it. I also wanted to let you know that our guest is going to touch on some issues around mental health, including her history of an eating disorder and suicide attempts.
Hi everyone and welcome to another episode of the Label Podcast. This week we've got Gemma Steele, who is a runner who has got autism and ADHD, who's going to talk to us a little bit about what she's got going on and you know, how her conditions kind of intersect together. So Gemma, do you want to start by just telling us a little bit about, you know, your running career and what you've done with that?
Yeah, I started off as a runner when I was like 20, to be honest. I was a late starter with road, like distance running. And it's something I was good at, you know, from a young age. Separate from my sister, really. So, yeah, it was nice to have my own identity, really, and establish that a little bit, really. And yeah, I just wanted to be in the social side of it, really, to start off with, which I've struggled with all my life. And yeah, it was nice to just find a club that I actually gelled with, and despite my Asperger's, but yeah, they were a nice sociable bunch, you know. Yeah, they called themselves a running club with a drinking problem. So, they were quite,
I like the sound of that running club.
So yeah, Hermitage Harriers, they were just more of a social sort of club, really. Mm. And met my partner down there, and he was quite confident, and he sort of put me on the right track, inspired me, motivated me. He was very loud and gregarious character, which was like the opposite to me. So yeah, brought me out of my shell a bit and got me involved in the races. So yeah, I've got him to thank for that, really, because I didn't have any confidence at the time. So yeah, despite his faults, he was very good, really, in that respect.
Yeah. It'll be particularly interesting for our listeners that we've got Gemma on, because we have previously had Gemma's twin sister Louise on, and Louise came on and talked to us about performing and singing. So I think it's very interesting that you've both, pursued these activities that kind of put yourself out there. You know, they're quite sort of full on activities, but very different. Louise's is very, it's about her voice, it's about performance and dressing up and stuff, and yours is, it's all about running. And what does running mean to you?
Well, it means everything, really. It was life defining, to be honest. It saved me in a way from 18. I was really struggling. Had a suicide attempt then, which wasn't good, and I was trying to find my identity, basically. I was lost with that, and joined the running club when I was 19, so yeah, turned it around for me, really. My running, I didn't, the plan wasn't to be a world-class athlete. I just wanted to be a social, to find my place, really, in society and have that sense of purpose which the running gave me.
So, but you have done competitive running, haven't you? You've accomplished some pretty impressive things with your running.
Yeah, it just went from strength to strength, really. It was a bit of an not accidental, but it was basically. From being a club runner to world class, beating Paula Radcliffe and being a GB athlete, and on the verge of.
Did you start running as a, you know, in order to help with your mental health side of things? Was that the main reason? How did you find running? Did somebody suggest it, or did you do the couch to 5K and actually think to yourself, actually do, you know, going for a run? What made you think I'm going to try running? Because as somebody who doesn't run, it wouldn't be the first one on my list, you know, can't run. It wouldn't be the first thing on my list to go, no, that'll help.
Oh, so, you see, I get it, because I do, I'm not like, I wouldn't call myself a runner like Gemma, but I do like to do that kind of, there's something about switching off and just running. I really like it.
Yeah, I think because you let your feet do the talking, basically, and because I struggled that much with my communication, I think with running, you just have to get out there, put your trainers on. It's such a simple act, but it just, it just helps you get to focus. It gives you a sense of purpose. It just helped me, really. Like, that was the main thing to function, to be honest, a lot better. So,
It's almost like it sort of calms, it flicks that switch in your head and you calm down, you know, the busyness. So again, because I do a lot of meditation, and I didn't think when I started, when I started to learn how to meditate, I thought, I'm not going to be able to do this because my brain is constantly like on the go. But I actually found that once I mastered the art of sitting still and not worrying about whether my brain was actually thinking, and how to deal with that, it really helped me, you know, when I'm in a lot of pain and things like that, it helps. So I can imagine that running does exactly the same for you too. It kind of like just calms the mind a bit and just gives you a bit of peace, does it?
Yeah, it's like a coping mechanism. It shuts down all my, you know, endless worrying and all little niddling things that go through my mind. And when I finish running, everything just seems, less important.
Feel better.
Easier. Makes life more manageable, really. And I think, done that. That's the main thing out of the way. And I can think a lot more clearly afterwards and function a lot better.
So that sort of, you know, talking about anxiety and worry, is that how your ADHD kind of manifests for you? Is it an anxiety thing, or is there more to it than that? I don't have ADHD, so I don't, you know, I don't understand what it's like kind of in your head. Tell us a little bit about what that's like.
Well, it's like a double-edged sword, really, because I thrive off the anxiety. I like work off the anxiety a little bit and the adrenaline. And sometimes I have to get myself into that stressed state to actually get things done. So, all of a sudden, last minute, I've got to do this, rather than I'm planning it rationally, and I can get it all sorted gradually. I have to do it all in one go at the last minute. So, with running, it's just like you put your trainers on, you get out the door. That's the hard bit for me, actually putting the trainers on. getting the, you know, the preparation. Well, it's not much preparation, to be honest, but you just put your trainers on, get out the door, and run, basically. So. And the ADHD, it's good for people with ADHD because it just, it's a simple thing, unless people complicate it for you when you're, marathons and getting gels together and getting drinks sorted and things like that. But it is simple activity. So anyone can do it. And basic form of exercise. So it works for me. Yeah.
I think it's interesting though, Alice, because we've said in previous episodes, you know, how exercise, even though you might not like the thought of it, having, you know, doing exercise and whatever kind of exercise, whether it's like alongside somebody, as in a physio helping you, assisting you to do exercise, or going and doing it yourself, even you might feel absolutely shit whilst you're doing it because it's horrible and you hate every second of it, which is me. But then once I've done it, I feel so much better. I mean, I'm knackered, but I feel better. And I think for me, when my body's not in pain and my mind's not worrying about things and I'm calm, that helps me far more than, you know, when I've not had any exercise, I've got stiff because my joints are hurting. It just really does sort of soothe me a little bit. And it helps again with my anxiety, because I worry about the smallest little things. I wake up at like 2 o'clock in a panicking.
And I know that if I can calm myself down, I'm more or less all right.
So is there like a specific activity that you think, okay, I need some adrenaline, I'm gonna, other than running, that you think I need some adrenaline to get this done, I'll go and make myself anxious by logging onto Facebook for a bit, because let me tell you that I get that all the time, and I haven't got ADHD. How can I make myself more anxious and self-loathing? I know, all of them on Twitter, that kind of thing. So is there any specific activity that sort of give you the impetus to get stuff done?
Don't really know. Deadline, maybe.
Never thought
losing my sponsorship when I had it, you know, for running. Right. Just little things that I have to, that motivate me. Ooh, I've got to do this, otherwise I'll lose my sponsorship. My coach won't be happy with me. You know, triggers like that really would make me anxious. But obviously, not got that anymore. So
no,
it's a relief in some ways, but I do need that person to push me. To push my buttons also on all of, because ADHD is very hard to get your brain to want to do something, to motivate yourself, and because you want that reward straight away, the dopamine levels, and that's where running comes in, and also the Facebook where got a like in there, and that keeps me going motivation wise as well, but. I've not got that at the minute, so that's sort of dwindled a bit since I was hacked, but I do rely on a lot of things to help me motivate myself. But it's getting easier, hopefully.
So it's like having positive reinforcement and something positive that it's like earning a reward for, really.
Yeah and you get that medal at the end a lot of the time in running.
I suppose.
You get that reward at the end.
Keep your eyes on the prize.
And I've got all them on display, so I keep them.
Have you?
All my medals and stuff. So. You just have to keep reminding yourself.
And is that sort of how your ADHD sort of manifests for you? It's about, finding, needing to work to a reward, because otherwise you get distracted or otherwise you get sort of overwhelmed. Tell us a little bit about what goes on in your head when you're in those situations.
I think it's just prioritizing a lot of things that I find hard. It just all becomes a tangled mess really sometimes. If I don't take a step back and think rationally about things, otherwise I'll just be like freak out. I don't know if that's normal for most people, but that's this morning. I'll get the laptop to work. I think people can relate.
I haven't got ADHD and I am like that. I have to get myself organized way in advance before I do anything. So with this podcast, I have to make sure everything's set up and it's easy reach, and I'm not, because if I feel flustered I get panicked, and if I'm panicked you're not going to get the best out of me, so I have to make sure I'm super organized. You wouldn't know that I'm super organized though, Alice, would you? Because I'm
I was just gonna say it, I don't know if it's if it's something that's just an inherent part of my personality, or if it's something that's kind of happened because of my experience and my disability, but I'm not an organized person. I'm not I said this to Lucy before, I'm just a blagger. I'm just a we'll just go in and see what happens. And I don't know if it's because that's my personality or if it's just, that I've spent 30 years of perhaps being super, super prepared and still falling over something because I didn't think it. And so my brain's just gone, fuck it, why waste all, spend all the spoons getting super prepared to then be for it to just go wrong anyway. So now I'm just fuck it, we'll just roll up and see what happens. Because I think if I try and prepare too much, that's what gives me anxiety.
Overthinking.
I just think, I can do this, but then what if this happens and what if this goes wrong? And
Well, this is it. Yeah, they tried to get me to do the marathon, so I was put on funding to do the marathon, and the marathon is a super organised preparation. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You've got to get everything spot on, and yeah, it just wasn't going to work for me. But obviously, they didn't know I had ADHD at the time.
Nice.
Yeah. So when I was only diagnosed a couple, well, this last year, was it this year? Last year or this year, I can't remember.
Yeah.
So yeah, it was, yeah, basically, you've got the fitness, you've got physically capable, but at the end of the day, my mind wasn't suited to running the marathon.
So
it's an invisible disability, basically. And yeah, they didn't realise it at the time, just because I was fit, physically fit, and able to do it. And they tested me in the lab at Loughborough. Same genetics as Paula Radcliffe, you know, lactic acid threshold and VO2 max. But yeah, the missing bit that was missing was the mind, because the marathon's all in the mind, basically.
I completely understand that. So when you were diagnosed with ADHD, did it kind of all make sense? Did everything all make sense? Did you think, oh, so that's what that is? Did you think to yourself, what a relief now that I know and other people know that there's a reason to why I'm so focused on reward as the key thing? Did it all sort of make sense?
Yeah, because I just thought, oh God, I'm just a scatterbrain. I'm just like blonde bimbo sort of thing, you know. But I mean, I don't like to use it as an excuse, but yeah, I don't mind telling people, to be honest. I'm like pretty open about it now.
Yeah.
It's just me ADHD, you know, I've lost my keys. People just accept it now.
Yeah.
And I don't have to say, oh, I'm just, a scatterbrain all the time. And
you don't have to make excuses for it now, because people understand that you've got this extra sort of support need.
Yeah, I think so. And then they help me more then, and they say, oh, do you want me to carry something for you? Or do you want me to help you, organise you? Like yesterday in my interview, I've got about 3-4 medals with me and a couple of Great Britain jackets, trying to juggle everything. And he said, do you want me to help you carry those? When I told him, and they understood more then, I think, when I lost my keys.
There is great power, isn't there, in, I think, sort of owning, you know, that the fact that you've got a support need, or you know, you have got additional needs. I think that a lot of some people are they don't want to sort of make a big thing about it, but I think on the other flip side of that coin is, you know, there is a lot of power in being able to say, look, you know, I do find some things difficult, because it's kind of like, it's getting it out in the open. It's the elephant in the room, rather than people thinking, oh, they're a little bit weird kind of thing. It's getting it out in the open and sort of explaining it. And then everybody's put at ease then, aren't they, really? Rather than thinking, well, there's something not quite right about Gemma, or there's something not quite right about Alice, or Lucy's a bit odd. Because, I mean, people think I'm a little bit odd. But when you say, I mean, my disability is very visible, but I don't know what it's like for you two, you know, when you say, oh, you know, I've got, you know, such and such an impairment, is it that kind of, we can get on with the rest of what we've got to get on with today, and you don't have to sort of tiptoe around the issue and hide it? Because I suppose hiding it is a job in itself, isn't it?
I don't see the point, really, because I think people can get offended or hurt by some of the things that are comments, and or if I don't reply to people straight away, like on a message, and I don't have to say, oh, you know, I'm being ignorant. I just say, oh, sorry, I can't process that as quickly as what you want me to. I'll reply straight away, because of my Asperger's or ADHD or whatever. So if people don't get offended then, and you know, not hurting people's feelings as much. So yes, it's good to get, you know, say, it's not my fault sort of thing.
Yeah, I think it's kind of a two-sided coin, because, you know, Lucy, you have those experiences where you have to go through the slightly awkward bit of people kind of recognizing that you've got a need, and then kind of going, oh, what do I need to do? And when I think you've got an invisible disability, you have to do the awkward bit of going, actually I've got a disability and telling people, but then also having to have that second awkward conversation of them going, well, what does that mean I have to do? You know, so it is a, there is kind of, I can almost see that there is an element to having such a visible disability as yours that people will immediately go, oh, I need to be aware. Whereas when you've got an invisible disability, people don't recognize it as often. And, you know, people kind of forget and will do things and say things and you sort of go, you know, I'm right here. Let's not.
Yeah, and with me being an athlete as well and being successful, I think people don't realise the struggles that I go through because they just think I'm superhuman, you know, I can take it on and do it, anything, you know. And really, that's not the case because I sort of have to compensate for it with my running and I have to do a lot of coping mechanisms to have achieved the success that I have done. And basically, I'm trying to overcompensate with this, you know, ability that I've got, and I'm not, they're not seeing it as a disability, they're seeing it as a, you know, well, I see it as an ability, really. So yeah, it's funny, really.
No, I think it's really interesting, you know, to hear what you were saying about, you know, people encouraging you to run a marathon, but you saying you didn't have the kind of the mental sort of capacity to do it. And you know, the way you talked about it and the way you told that story, it wasn't a, I wanted to run a marathon. This was my dream. No. You know, I would like to do a marathon. I've challenged myself that I'm going to run a marathon before I'm 35. So I'm going to have to run it within the next 18 months. I am not ready. So that, I don't think that's going to happen. But it's, you know, it's something I really want to do for myself. And I know it's going to be grueling and hard, but it's something, and you, I think you have to want to do that, to put your body through something like that, you have to want to do it. And I think, you know, the way you were saying that you didn't feel as though you were kind of had the headspace for it, it's, and it's then really interesting to hear you kind of say, well, actually, you know, my, your ADHD is kind of what fuels you to work to those successes and rise to those challenges. But it, you're also kind of aware enough to go, well, you know what, sometimes actually my ADHD is the thing that means maybe I can't do this particular thing. And you know, how do you, do you feel like that has had an impact on kind of your relationship with your ADHD and the way you feel about it, or do you still sort of embrace it and feel like actually this is my superpower?
Yeah, in a ways I feel like I've failed. I fail at, you know, because they want, you know, marathon is, it was the be all and end all at one point. It was like, do a marathon, you won't get in the Olympics otherwise, and the marathon's the only thing that matters, sort of thing. So yeah, my coach, yeah, she couldn't really accept it, really, that I couldn't get my head around it. I kept saying, I can't get my head around it, a marathon. They were like, oh, you just have to get your body around it. But yeah, I don't think they understood my condition and the awareness. They didn't have the awareness of, yeah, they knew something wasn't quite right, but yeah, and I struggled. But yeah, and without my diagnosis, yeah, they still didn't, I still think they don't accept it, that I'm not capable. I'm not using it as an excuse, it's just the fact that I find it very hard to keep my attention for that long and to prepare. It's not something I see as my strength, really.
I think it's hard because you can't, with something like a marathon, you can't separate the physical preparation you have to put your body through to do something like that. Like there's an element of sort of practical organization of, you know, making sure you've got drinks and making sure that you've got support and all of those things, but there is also an element of going 26 miles. That's a lot.
But it's like the last 6 miles are the ones that you need to really, you know, have energy. You're just running on your own mental mindset, really, aren't you? Yeah, I can focus when I want to, but yeah, it's just hard to maintain it. for 26 medals.
Yeah, I wish I'd done a bit of research because I don't know, you know, the Paralympics, what you tend to see is, you know, people with physical difference. Mm. But actually, you know, I think that there ought to be a category there for ADHD and Asperger's and things like that, because you are impaired in your ability to undertake sport, but you're still actually very capable sports people. And, you know, I think it would be really interesting. You know, they do wheelchair marathons. Well, why could they not do autistic marathon?
I think they do a special Olympics. I think my coach, yes, they tried to look into it for me. Which,
really?
Yeah, I was like, okay. Because I've achieved so much, you know, just running against world-class people. Mm. You know, running 68 half marathon and 31 and a half 10Ks. You know, I'd just been miles ahead of everyone. Like, I think the world record is 120 something for, like, someone with Asperger's or something for half marathon or... Well, it's not super quick, so I'd be like miles ahead. But I think you have to have them sort of like an IQ of less than sort of 70 or something, which I'm not sure I'd qualify for. I'm not sure.
Well, and the point I'm making is that's, you know, there's, especially with autism spectrum disorders, it's a spectrum, and to, you know,
you get
high functioning,
low functioning. So
if
you've got it, you've got it. And yeah, I don't think you should say, I've got it mild or I've got it.
Yeah.
Because trying to function with high functioning doesn't mean to say that, you know, just because you can cope with it doesn't mean to say that you don't struggle, does it?
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
So because I cope with it and I've achieved everything I have, it doesn't mean to say it's been easy for me. Far from it. Yeah.
I think that's the thing that you see a lot in, you know, a lot of disabled people, and it kind of overlaps with the stuff about being an inspiration that Lucy hates so much, is that there's that question of, you know, people will say to you, oh, you're such an inspiration because you're in a wheelchair and you managed to get a job and, you know, put your makeup on and get out of the house.
Yeah.
And actually, that you shouldn't be inspirational for that, but you should. It should be recognised that having a disability does make stuff like that more difficult.
Yeah. I mean, for me, just putting my makeup on, getting dressed in the morning is hard work sometimes.
Yeah.
Putting the right trainers on and, not getting things mixed up and, things like that.
For me, it's a very fine line, I think, between people not realising how much effort goes into getting me up in the morning, getting me showered, getting me dressed, getting my, you know, making myself look nice, making sure I've not dropped any food down me before I go out of the house, which happens all of the time, all of the time. So there's a fine line of people not even registering with people that it's taken like a small village to get me up in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
Mostly down to my mother, to be fair. My mother is an angel. And then you've got the other side of the coin where everybody thinks I'm an inspiration just for getting up and breathing, you know. It's very difficult because it's not that I don't want people to recognize that some things are a struggle. But at the same time, I don't want you to make a big song and dance about it. I want you to acknowledge it. Because I think a lot of people see, like, Lucy sat in a wheelchair and go, yeah, that's Lucy, she's all right, she sat down. But there is a lot that other people don't see. And I suppose, Gemma, it's the same. Well, I suppose it's the same for all of us, really, that people don't see the hidden soul.
People would laugh if they knew, like, oh, I struggle to get up in the morning and struggle to... put my, you know, sort what clothes I'm actually going to wear that day and make an actual decision, because at the end of the day I'll just chuck something on the last minute. I won't plan it. I'll just be like, oh, I woke up like this. But it does take that extra effort, which probably people take for granted.
Well, I think that was sort of what I was saying about, you know, some kind of Paralympics where actually it recognizes that although you may physically be, you know, at the top of most runners' games, you do have this extra need that makes completing a marathon harder for you. And is that not the point of the Paralympics, that you're able to demonstrate that you can compete on a world-class level, but that you have to have certain adaptations because of your disability?
I think they have done things like that for me in the past, like made a bit of an exception, like at the Great South Run when I wanted a bottle given to me, and but I don't know, no one knew about obviously my Asperger's or ADHD, but I think they just thought, because they're quite familiar with me, they made a bit of a
just being a diva.
Well, yeah, they thought, oh, you've been a bit of a diva, oh, can I get my special bottle sorted, because it'll help me, because it gives me that motivation, that little bit of extra boost. It probably didn't give me an advantage, it just gave me that mental boost, you know. In 10 miles, you don't really need a drink, but...
I always call it a disability rider, you know, like how Mariah Carey will have a rider and it's like, I want 14 white kittens and only the red M&Ms. I'm a bit like, when I get there, please, I would like a ramp and I would like somebody to greet me at the door.
You can do that,
That kind of thing. And there is no shame in it. Like, I've been to the hairdressers this morning and we always make a joke that because I can't, when I sit in the basin to have my hair washed, to wash the hair dry off my hair, I can't put my feet on the floor. So they put the kiddies cushion that the kids sit on to like raise their height. They put that under my feet and they call it the Mariah Carey stool because I'm like, can I have that please under my feet? Because I can't put my feet on the floor. That kind of thing. And there's nobody bats an eyelid, but we call it the Mariah Carey stool. It's just, you know, there's no shame in making your needs known before you do anything. There's no shame in that at all. And you know, if people want to have issue with it, well, then you talk to me about it. I'll tell you exactly why I need it, that kind of thing. You know, and I don't come into contact with people going, well, no, we can't do that because it's unfair to everybody else. I'm not asking you to make special dispensation because I am the Mariah Carey of Staffordshire.
You're not just doing it for the hell of it. You're doing it because you've got a need. It's I'm doing this qualification thing with work at the moment, and my team leader is amazing and very supportive of my disability. And she has gone off to HR and said, you know, Alice is coursework and stuff. She's going to need a bit of extra time. And HR were like, I think she can manage to do all of this work with an extra 25% time. And I'm going to take it and I'm going to do it. But I wanted to sort of go back to this woman and go, yeah, you know what, love? You have my eye condition for a week and see how much extra fucking time you need to get basic stuff done. The only reason I can do it in 25% extra is because I'm used to doing it and I've been doing it every single day. You'd have the shock of your fucking life if you had to live with my condition. And I think that's, you know, that's kind of the thing, is that people see us just living our lives and doing things and don't realise that, you know, we have put so much extra work into it.
So much. So much that it's so knackering sometimes. You think, oh, God, give me a break. Just give me weather legs while I just walk round this park for a bit, will you? You know, that kind of... It's because of that that I think sometimes it can tip you over the edge a bit and you think, oh,
I've had enough. Just give me a break, please.
Yeah.
Bit of help, please, from somebody.
Yeah.
But people just think, struggling. But some people obviously struggling. I don't know. Because, everyone struggles in a way, but, they don't, because I have a laugh about it, and they don't seem to take it seriously sometimes that I am really struggling, because I sort of laugh it off. I laugh it off a bit, and I'd rather cope with it myself rather than ask for help sometimes.
Do you feel that having a sense of humour helps?
Sometimes, because I can laugh at myself a lot of the time, and I'm scatty, I'm sorry. And, it's yeah, it does help. You have to have a sense of humour with it.
Do you think it's a bit of a defence mechanism?
It is, yeah, definitely. Yeah, I don't want people to think, oh, I'm like a victim of it, really. Because I've been so successful, and yeah, it's quite embarrassing, really. In a way, it's, yeah, some of the things I do, it's embarrassing. I've got no common sense half the time either. So, yeah, you just have to laugh, really. I had a job at a factory when I was 19, and I sort of couldn't cope with being standing there on a belt, passing things. And
yeah,
I wanted to do it all myself, and I was trying to take over a little bit. And, yeah, they didn't sort of like it, and I had a girl that sort of, you know, I think we ended up throwing paint at each other. It was a paint factory.
Right.
And, yeah, we had a bit of a tiff, and yeah, I couldn't cope in that sort of environment.
No.
And even McDonald's, trying to get all the till orders right and remember things, multitasking, I couldn't do it. So I thought, that's embarrassing. You know, I've got A levels, I've got GCSEs, but I can't do basic things like this.
Yeah.
And so I ended up with a cleaning job in the end at the Cop Tote, which I could cope with a couple of hours a week.
Yeah.
But even then, it was like, got my boss sneaking up on me because I was so quiet, like a little mouse. And he just used to sneak up and go boo like that. And it used to, I was like, oh, I've got a bit of a nervous disposition. And then, yeah, I just ended up quitting my job and qualified for England for the first time after that. So it was a bit like,
wow.
Yeah, I went from being a cleaner in a pub to running for England. So I sort of, yeah, it was nice to think, the cleaner's done well.
Yeah, definitely. As my mum says, there's different types of clever, and just because, you know, you can be book clever, and then there's the other sort of clever, which is, you know, which is what I think people with disabilities are very good at. They're very good at adapting to situations, and it's completely untapped by most people. You know, most companies and stuff, they are, it's completely untapped, that potential that disabled people have got. They just see as somebody as like, oh, they've got additional needs. Yeah. They're going to need more support. They're going to cost us more money.
They don't look at the
flip side of the coin. This person's in a wheelchair and can bring a whole wealth of experience from a completely different angle we've never thought about. I mean, the amount of job interviews I've been to in the past where...
Don't talk about job interviews. I've not been to many interviews.
You must have done quite a lot of other interviews.
Talking about running, yeah. But in an interview for a job, I think I'd struggle, to be honest. Yeah, just with my anxiety and probably. Yeah, but like I say, in this pandemic, I think, with the jobs, I think people with Asperger's are quite... the people that are actually the ones that are helping the most keeping the jobs, because we've not been able to socialise as much. You know, they're the ones that are keeping us going, really, like postmen, you know, people that are working through the night, engineers trying to work on the vaccines and things like that. And people with Asperger's are more valuable, I'd say, at the minute. Definitely. because they don't have to they haven't got the social skills, so they're not going to be, you know, we're going to be isolated anyway, so we're not going to be, you know, socialising, are we? So someone's got to do it.
Yeah, sort of, you're not.
They just get on with it more, get on with it, rather than
the
socialising aspect, which is more valued in society these days, how sociable you are. Yeah.
People with Asperger's and stuff like that aren't necessarily bothered about what Sandra did at the weekends. Do you know what I mean? They don't want the sport, but just give me the job, I'm going to do it, then I'm going to go home. Like that kind of.
That's it, And they don't get distracted by small talk. They just get on with it. You know, they'll get it done, get the job done. Whereas, done this, that, and the other,
You can tell just by the way you're talking about it that you just have no interest in that at all. You're just like, no, really. I don't care what you're doing at the weekend.
Not really, I find it all on Facebook anyway.
More on Facebook than they'll tell you in real life, if I'm honest, because they've got no filter, because they're not actually stood in front of somebody telling them all their dirty laundry. They are writing it down and they think it's fine, nobody's going to read this. Then actually when they discover it's gone viral and they're up for a disciplinary.
Oh, I think at the end of this pandemic, hopefully people with Asperger's will be better thought of, really, because people are realising that it's not all about the entertainers and the people that are out there, you know, extroverted, is it? It's all about just getting things done, really.
So Gemma, you talked to, it's interesting to hear you sort of talk about that being an introvert, because I think a lot of people associate ADHD with those kind of kids that are off the wall and always go in and you know, are very center of attention because of their behavior. But then obviously for you, coupling that with your Asperger's, you find kind of communication and socializing is difficult for you. What's sort of, how do you feel like your the two conditions kind of intersect with each other?
I don't know, it's a weird combination, really. In a way, yeah, I like to be the center of attention in a way, but yeah, I do struggle with communication because I get caught out a lot of the time. Yeah, and if too many people are talking at the same time, I can't, you know, deal with that. And it's weird, really. I think I've got more the ADD, like, rather than hyperactive. I think it's more of the
ADD space, rather than
spaced out more things, rather than going to moon world sort of thing, rather than the hyperactive one. Yeah, I've never been destructive or anything like that at school. I've always been the quiet one, like in the corner, basically. Never.
And I suppose you've got. You've got a very interesting situation with, you know, having your sister, your twin sister there, who's also got Asperger's, but doesn't have the ADHD sort of element of it. So, or the ADD element of it. So you've kind of almost got that comparison of, well, this is what Louise is like, and this is what Gemma is like, and Gemma's got this, you know, how much do you think the differences between you and Louise are about your ADD or about just your personality and you being different people?
I think my ADD sent me in the direction of my running, really. I think that's probably the reason why Louise doesn't run and I do, in a way, because I do it to help me function, really, as well. And I've got that competitiveness, but Louise doesn't seem to have that as much. But, yeah, if she wanted to, she could probably be, you know, one of the best runners like me, you know, but she doesn't want to.
But what do you think about Louise's singing? Is that something you think you'd want to do?
Yeah, I like singing on the karaoke, but I can't really. I can't write my own songs or anything. That just feels me. That sort of deepness of meaning with the lyrics and everything, I can't really. I can't relate to that very much. I mean, I did a bit of poetry at school, but I can't really. I don't know how she does that, really.
So you you mentioned sort of quite early on that you'd had some problems with your mental health and stuff like that.
Yeah.
How do you think that has, because I know you said these were before you'd had your diagnosis, but sort of on reflection, how do you feel like, you know, the Asperger's and the ADD fit in with that mental health and the depression that you've experienced?
Yeah, the Asperger's was very, very bad when I was a teenager. I wouldn't speak to anyone, really. I wouldn't know how to make a conversation. No, I wouldn't. I wouldn't know how to start.
You think that fed into the kind of the mental health, feeling isolated and lonely?
Yeah, definitely, yeah. I mean, I couldn't make a conversation to save my life, really.
With Louise?
Yeah, with Louise there, I could sort of feed off it a little bit, but yeah, I was always the quiet one. Didn't really have any opinion on anything. I was it's quite sad, really. I felt like a bit of a shadow, like I was there, but not really there, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Quite sad times, really. And obviously I had eating disorders as well. Didn't help. Losing a lot of weight and stuff. Which was obviously to do with my identity, trying to get my own identity and trying to fit in, trying to look the part, good sort of thing in society. Yeah, and it's hard, really hard. I didn't know why. Why do I feel like this?
Yeah.
Yeah, awful.
And looking back, do you think you would have had more of an understanding if you'd had your diagnosis? Do you think that would have helped you more? Or do you think, you know, was that uncertainty about your identity and that need to kind of fit in? Because, you know, teenage girls do... you know, are the demographic for people who have eating disorders. And, you know, it's not every teenage girl that has an eating disorder doesn't also have ADD or, you know, Asperger's. Mm. Do you think if you'd had your diagnosis, it would have made those thoughts and that experience make more sense to you? Or do you think the incidence is sort of linked? Or do you think actually it's quite separate and your Asperger's kind of just compounded the sort of loneliness and isolation element of the mental health issues?
I was trying to get to the bottom of it for a long time. Yeah, and we couldn't find the answers why I was like that, the way I was. And we tried to get to the bottom of it, and yeah, we didn't. Obviously, I didn't get any answers till I was a few years ago. So.
Yeah,
it's weird, really. I wish I'd have known sooner, because then I would have been able to say, yeah, it's not your fault, Gemma. You're not just weird. You're not just, you know, failing at things. And, you know, there's a reason for it, and the reason why you can't just make a conversation easily. And, yeah, the teachers would have known more at school as well, because, yeah they tried to pick on us a lot because we didn't put hands up at school in the class and things like that. I won't say boo to a goose, I wouldn't want to volunteer and answer. And, yeah, we got singled out a bit for that and told off quite a lot by one of our teachers. And it was quite, bullying. Well, she was a bit of a bully, really, which wasn't very nice. And, we were a bit... Yeah, I thought it was all my fault, you know. And then when you go into school as well and you don't really have any idea about fashion or fitting in, like everyone will be going to school with their next bags, carrier bags, and the latest trainers.
Mm.
There in your high-tech trainer with an Audi carrier bag. And things like that, really, where you just think, you target for bullies, but we had each other, but all the other girls were more conscious about. We've got these fringes as well, like ones that haircuts and things at school. I didn't know any different, really.
I have seen, there's a brilliant picture floating around of Gemma and Louise at school, look like these, a little bit like twins from The Shining, with their sort of their dark hair and their fringes, that we'll have to put up on Instagram as and when these episodes go out.
Yeah,
so people have a bit of an idea of what you're talking about.
Yeah, we were we weren't exactly glamorous back then.
I'll be honest, I think it was the mid-90s. I don't think anybody was really that glamorous, to be honest.
No.
And I think we've all had a dodgy fringe haircut at some stage as a kid, which, you know, when you are in a wheelchair that is like a massively clunky, big, heavy thing, and you've got a fringe that and I was obsessed with this pair. I had a pair of rainbow leggings, which were stripy, which, looking back now, I thought I looked like the bee's knees in them, but I did not look like the bee's knees in them. And I got really thick bottom glasses. It's I wonder why I ever really made any friends, to be honest. But yes, I wouldn't worry about it. Everybody in the 90s was a bit like odd looking.
Yeah.
And I think the joy of, you know, part of the reason that you know, I know Louise because we were in a class together at uni, and I think part of the reason me and Louise were kind of drawn to each other was because we were both like, and I Louise has commented on being surprised by it because she's sort of, I come across as being very confident, but we were both those weird, awkward kids at school.
Mm.
And you know, who didn't really, and even in our class that we were in at uni, we weren't the popular kids. Mm. Like, I might have been the loud one, but it doesn't mean that people liked me.
Mm.
You know, we were slightly different in our music taste and our fashion taste and stuff like that. And it is, I think it's that's really hard when you're a teenager to feel different. But I do think it is one of the, like, the great things that brings adults together is that awkwardness that you kind of recognize. You're like, oh, you didn't have any friends at school either. Let's be friends now.
I know, they're all coming out the woodwork now on Facebook.
Yeah.
We said this a few weeks ago.
Did they even know who I was at school? Didn't even have a name.
We said this a few weeks ago, didn't we, Alice, that now we've got a podcast. Specifically, I've got people coming out of the woodwork who I don't really wish to speak to, but they're like, oh, can I come on your podcast, please? I'm like, yeah. No.
It's the beauty, I think, of having changed, like getting married and changed my name, is that people can't search for me anymore. Just be like, oh, there she is. I used to go to school with her. It's like, no. Completely different person now. Thank you.
I know.
There's only a handful of people that I speak to from school these days, and I mean like two or three. The rest of them, I'm not really interested in, you know. I go to school reunions and I'm like, you're still living like it's 1995. And it just makes me feel a bit weird, really. So we don't do school reunions anymore.
Should have a reunion at our school, that would be weird. Me and Louise are so different now.
Yeah.
And the little shy girls at school, and now we're like, yeah, Louise is successful and doing what she's doing, and I've done well for myself in a way. So
there is that.
You've done really well, Gemma. You've done that a couple of times where you've been a bit like, oh well, but like you've smashed it. Like some of the races and some of the times and stuff that you've done, like this. It's impressive.
I'm still one of those that I should have done more, really. Should have got to the Olympics, but it's not my fault. Cross country wasn't in the Olympics. That was my only option. I wasn't cut out for that in the end, so you still feel a bit like a failure in some ways, but then again you just think, well, I didn't expect to even come this far. So
Gemma, just because you didn't get in the Olympics does not make you a failure.
There are lots of people, like in the grand scheme of the population, the number of people that don't make it into the Olympics, you're still better than like 98% of them.
I know, but
there's still hope for me,
Well, and now that you've got your diagnosis and you've got an understanding of what your needs are, you're in a much better place to be able to go, well, you know, if this is what I want to do, this is what you people have to do to support me to get there. Because you're doing your bit. You're bringing, you know, the stamina and the speed. It's other people that need to make it accessible for you.
That's where a coach comes in, isn't it? That's where they have to adapt to my needs and.
Yeah, absolutely.
Give me a bit more encouragement as well, because I didn't have a lot of encouragement from my last coach, to be honest. They had quite a lot of expectations for me, and they didn't really praise me as much as they should have done for what I'd achieved. And I felt a bit like, what more can I do?
You know, it's finding a coach that understands you and understands your condition as well. You know, finding somebody who can understand the reason why Gemma can't do X, Y, and Z is because of, you know, this reason. And once you find somebody who can understand you, I think that's like in any walk of life, finding friends, relationships, find somebody that understands you and goes, yeah, no, I get it. it makes life so much easier.
And even just simple things like, oh, I'm doing laps around the track, which I find quite daunting. Just someone being there to take pictures of me while I'm running. That instant feedback, you know. Try and get me to maintain my form while I'm running. I've got some evidence of this session, you know, sense of achievement when I've finished. I can look back at the picture. Just a little thing like that would, you know, inspire me or motivate me. But no one actually picked up on that, like my coaches.
I mean, do you think that you'd like to take, you know, your experience of not having had the right support from coaches, you know, would you ever imagine, sort of foresee yourself going out and providing that support for other people? Could you see yourself doing coaching and you know, being that person for other people because you understand, or do you not, is that not something you have any interest in?
Yeah, I'd like to help younger people because, yeah, I think I get on with people that are younger than me or older than me. I don't get on with people my own age as well. I think that's doing Asperger's. I tend to get on with more with like older people more of them. And yeah, I'm probably 50, 60 year olds, which is weird. But yeah, and younger people, kids as well. I don't find intimidating.
I think you'd be a great coach, if I'm honest. From what I've heard of you today, Gemma, I think you would be an absolutely fantastic coach that would be the supporting influence that you maybe have been so lacking in, you know, before. You can take that horrible experience of not having the supportive network around you whilst you were running, and turn that into a positive and say, well, that wasn't there for me when I was doing this, but I will be there giving whoever I'm coaching that support. And I think you'd be absolutely fantastic at it.
Yeah. It's just finding a job that fits, like Asperger's people that I've recommended. They would make good coaches because it's just one-on-one, isn't it? Like, you don't have to deal with emotions and things like that. You're just there. Yeah. You know, it's quite, well, I'm not saying it's easy, but you're standing there just being supportive, really, with a stopwatch. You've got to be there just giving advice. You don't have to shout at people. I mean, I've got this image stereotype in my head that as a coach you have to shout at people and boss them about, but no. I don't think that works well, does it, really, as a coach sometimes.
Well, I think you've got the experience to sort of be able to go, well, actually, you know what does work? What makes a good coach? Because it sounds like you've had some not good coaches and you've been able to kind of sit there and go, well, actually, you know what would be better? It would be if you did it this way.
Well, my coach was in, went out to Doha, I just got texted my information. I didn't have a coach there, just standing there watching me do the sessions. I did it all on my own, basically. I did it the hard way, put it that way, but I had no choice, really. In some ways, I didn't really like someone standing there watching me, telling me what to do. A bit awkward. And I found that quite, intimidating, having someone there. And even when I did have a coach there, they'd say, well, we just zone out anyway. And when they were shouting me on, I'd just like carry on. I wouldn't like respond. They weren't even there, sort of thing. So, I think they sort of gave up with me. Not gave up with me, but, you'd find me hard work with communication, because it is a lot of communication with coaches.
So what are you doing now? What's your kind of, are you still running? Are you running competitively at all?
I'm still trying to build it back up. I've had a bit of a month off because obviously I've had family issues. With my mum. Committing suicide a year ago now.
18 months or something, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's been a while,
So I've had a lot of trauma that I've not processed really with that. And I've not given myself a chance to. I don't know if there's any PTSD there. Like, I've not really, I don't know if it's there or not, really. It might be contributing to my ADHD, because I do have lapses in. It's been very sad. But I've used my running as a coping mechanism more than anything to deal with that and take a step back from the pressure of competing on the world stage. Great Britain, the last time I ran for Great Britain was back in 2018 when I was in the Commonwealth Games when we won the bronze medal in October. And even then I was having an anxiety attack then before the race. I was they were thinking about pulling me out of the team because I had a panic attack and I was crying and didn't really want to go through with it. That's hard. Because of the pressure from the coach, a lot of it. But I won the bronze medal, so I was happy that I went through with it in the end. Sometimes it depends on that stress to actually think, well, what else could go wrong? that, you know, I've gone through all the bad emotions, you know. Yeah, I'll just give it a go. See what happens.
Yeah.
So yeah,
yeah, I mean,
on a tangent there, but
no.
Can't remember what I was talking about.
You were just sort of talking about what you're doing now, and you said you're building back up after losing your mum and stuff.
Yeah, yeah. So I've been writing a book as well. I've been doing a bit of a life story. It's helped me. It's been therapeutic for me. Yeah, just I've been looking into university courses, but yeah, I've been not actually decided what I'd want to do with that yet.
Yeah,
probably move that to when I'm 40 now. On the back burner again. I'm a veteran now as well. I'm 35 vet, so yeah, so I'll be able to go into like veteran competitions, like World Masters things. I know it might be some might seem a bit of a cop out, but I don't know. It's just what I enjoy, you know. If I enjoy it or not, you know, I could go in be a world champion at my age group if I was successful. Just need to know what the times are that I don't have to run, really. But that'd be a good achievement. I hope the book that I'm writing can send that message across, because if there's anything that will be, yeah, give me more pleasure, would be to help people and to show them what they can achieve despite what, you know, the setbacks and everything. Because I've been through it all, so yeah, been to the bottom, literally, and got to the top. So. Yeah, it just shows you what's possible, really. Even though I've not been able to hold down a proper job, I still see that as, I mean, people think of success in different ways, don't they? Sometimes I think,
exactly.
I wish I could hold down a proper job, you know, but I probably wouldn't be able to do that. Running's been my saviour, really, in a way. You know, I couldn't hold down a proper job, I'm pretty sure I couldn't.
I mean, you're talking to two people who have decided to set up a podcast. So, you know, we know about like trying to find success outside of your quote unquote proper job.
Yeah, people are like, oh, so what else do you do apart from running? And I'm like, yeah, that is my job.
Yeah.
People don't believe me. They just think, oh, it's like a side thing that I do, but no, I've actually been able to make a good living at it, and
I was gonna say,
even have a job, so
yeah.
And to be honest, if running is, you know, if you can turn your passion into your actual job, then you're winning at life.
Absolutely. Yeah. If people want to start paying me and Lucy to do this, which, you know, just a polite reminder, go to our GoFundMe, guys. Head over to our website, donate to our GoFundMe, because me and Lucy would like to be able to just do this.
I know, yeah.
And we're also available for adverts and voiceover work.
Yeah, I know. But this is the thing, I used to do running just for fun, you know. Yeah. I didn't want to be paid for it. I mean, I just used to like winning trophies. I didn't, that wasn't all that. If I wanted to earn a lot of money, I wouldn't be in running.
So, still working on the book. Book's not ready.
No.
Do you have any idea? Or is it just the kind of you're working on it and it comes?
I'm working on it. I'm probably 3/4 of the way through it now. But yeah, it's, I do get distracted a lot and lose my focus with it a lot. But yeah, and it might need to get Louise to reread it and, you know, get her to say it's good, and you know, I should carry on with it, because I do.
You need an editor like ours.
I sometimes say, oh, it's not interesting, but yeah, I need that reinforcement, really, to carry on with it.
Yeah, positive reinforcement.
Motivate me a bit, yeah.
Well, I think if it's, you know, you cover half of what you talked about here, and we've touched on some really personal stuff, and you've been really open and really like honest about it, I think people, that's what people find interesting, and I think that's what means the most to people, you know, is knowing that it's not just them who's going through these things, who's finding certain things difficult, you know, to know that somebody who could have been in the Olympics has also had problems with like depression and mental health is going to make some people think, God, so it's, you know, you don't, it just because I have these problems, it doesn't mean that I can't achieve great things and I can't do things. It's because even somebody who's achieved this much and done this much has them.
Yeah. Well, I think if you have got things like issues, I think sometimes it can make you more determined, make you more driven. If my life was easy, I don't think I'd have ended up being a runner. I think I'd have just been probably a normal person in a normal job. So, yeah, it's shaped the way that I am, really. And
I'm a big believer. I'm a big believer in, you know, my disability is nothing. I mean, it hinders me physically sometimes, but in terms of my determination, it's probably spurred me on and given me a bit of rocket fuel to get, you know, get to where I'm, because I am so bloody minded and so determined that I'm gonna do this yeah. whether it kills me. And I think that is purely down to my disability. And like you say, if my life was easier, I don't think it would be. I don't think I would have so many weird stories to tell Alice every other week. Makes us interested at dinner parties, doesn't it?
Well, yeah, definitely. Losing both my shoes as well. I always use that one. I lost both my shoes in a cross-country race and carried on. Yeah.
Oh, my God!
Just things like that, really, that you think. But, yeah.
Like halfway through the race, or were you near the end?
I was, about a mile into it, I lost one. And then about a couple of miles into it, I lost the other. And then, yeah, I had 3 miles to run.
In your socks?
In the mud, yeah, in the mud.
Oh, God.
So I was like, I just went into, like, tunnel vision, just, like, zoned out and just pretended.
Yeah, didn't even realise you'd lost it.
Well, I did, but I just pretended it didn't happen. I was like, you go into that thing, oh, this can't be happening to me, you know. I'm just carrying on, but, yeah, I just did it. Yeah, but I've got to keep
practice. And where did you place in the race?
Third.
Third without her shoes on.
Intercounty.
And there she is. There's Gemma saying, yeah, but I'm not that good though because I didn't qualify for the Olympics. Oh, this woman
who cared
a race with no shoes.
Yeah.
I don't ever want to hear you say I'm not good enough again because you finished a race with no shoes on, Gemma. It's ridiculous.
I know. Forget marathons. But yeah, I'm thinking about doing a few things with barefoot and trying to do a few runs with bare feet for charity.
Oh, wow.
To raise mental health awareness or something. People might think I've lost the plot when I can still be running around with shoes on, but I think I'm past that stage now.
No, we'll definitely do some promotion for you if you decide to do a run with no shoes on.
Yeah, I think it's
possibly raise some money. Possibly raise some money to get you some shoes.
Oh, I've got plenty of shoes, don't worry. I'm tripping over them. I've got Nike shoes, New Balance. I've probably got 100 pairs.
Wow.
The sponsorship. Yeah. Yeah. I'm definitely not short shoes. don't feel sorry for me.
Fab. Yeah. No, that's been really interesting, Gemma. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Do you want to take a minute to just tell people where they can find you on social media and
my Instagram's not working at the minute, but it's back up and running soon. GemboSteel1 on Instagram, once I get the account back. And then GemmaSteel4 on Twitter, which I don't use that often. So you might not hear a lot from me on there. But yeah, Facebook's the main one. And I've just set up a new account on there. Gemma Steele, Facebook.
Fab. And I know you and Louise have done some children's books and stuff together. Did you want to plug those?
I'm hopefully going to get some done in hardback soon. And looking to venture into expanding on that. And you know, I've got a bit more time from my running. Yeah, to branch out a bit with those and promote them a bit more. One's called Chicken Dog, the bestseller. Spots versus Stripes, that's the one I did myself, but with help from Andrew, obviously, to print it out. And Clown Dog and Ziggy the Zebra, which was the original. So they're quite big in America, apparently.
Gemma's big in America.
Yeah, no, the look at Spots versus Stripes was an inspired one while I won the Beach to Beacon in America, and the Americans were quite interested in that one. It was all on the news and that, so yeah, I got a bit of promotion out there for that. Yeah, I never really like jumped on it, and so yeah.
Quite diverse career you've had, Gemma. It's been really cool having you on.
Thank you so much for your time, Gemma.
Yeah, I'd love to go on Strictly as well. That's my main ambition.
Okay.
The ballroom and the,
putting it out there into the universe.
Yeah, we're basically Gemma's agents now. Yeah, we're
Does that mean we get a commission? Because I'll take that.
Yeah, I know. I'll
get on the phone to Claudia Winkleman now.
You never know, do you?
Thanks for coming on, Gemma.
Gemma, thank you so much for your time.
Thanks, bye.
Thanks for listening to the Labelled Podcast. If you like the show, please rate, review and subscribe. You can follow us on social media at Labelled Podcast.
Our thanks go to our editor, Adam Hall, our music composer, Maisie Crunden, and our graphic designer, Sarah Coley.
We'll see you next time.